And west, now 74 degrees in Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from the first days that they are on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Well, I am in the presence of three very intelligent gentlemen, and I feel more than a little intimidated at the prospect of having these three gentlemen with it today on the morning show. Dr. Art Sear, of course, is a frequent visitor to the morning show, director of the Clausen Center, Clausen Distinguished Professor of Political Economy and World Business, and with him is a faculty colleague of ours, Dr. Yuri Maltsev, professor of economics at Carthage, and who has also been on the morning show a number of times before. And with them, a very special guest all the way from St. Petersburg, Russia, namely Pavel Usinov, who is a very well-known and respected economist and director of the Hayek Institute in St. Petersburg, and visiting Carthage yesterday and today. And we are really honored that he can join us today on the morning show to offer his perspective on life in Russia, its complex and fascinating histories, particularly from an economic point of view and what might be ahead for that nation. And I suspect he has some thoughts on the way the economy plays around the world, including right here in the United States. And I'm really pleased that we have this opportunity. So to Dr. Art Sear and Dr. Yuri Maltsev and Dr. Pavel Usinov, we welcome all of you to the morning show.
Hello.
Glad you can be here. Professor Sear, tell us first of all a little bit about how visits like this from Pavel Usinov fold so beautifully into the overall mission of the Clausen Center, of which you are the director.
Well, thank you for your gracious introduction, as always. The Clausen Center is named for Tom Clausen, our graduate from the Greatest Generation, who immediately after graduating from Carthage served in World War II in the Army Air Corps in the Atlantic Theater, a war that forged a very powerful alliance between ourselves and our Russian friends in that great patriotic war. And in many ways, I believe that friendship endured even during the difficult Cold War years. And certainly, our nations have many reasons to be friendly today. He went on to lead Bank of America twice, and in between the World Bank, the big UN organization. The center was established to recognize and honor his accomplishments and also to add value to the work of our college and our region. Business, of course, is a continuing emphasis. We also emphasize our ties with this region, particularly because President John Swallow of our college is now a very senior director of the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. We emphasize local work. Quite recently, last semester, our colleague Wenji Sen in Geospatial Sciences and her students did a project we developed with CABA to analyze investment in this immediate region for the last 10 years. At the same time, we work to do our best to make the college more visible, and in many ways both dimensions of our work, local and global, come together with a visitor like Dr. Usanov. Our colleague Yuri has a fantastic global network, local, global, everywhere in between, of friends and contacts, and it's really to his great credit and thanks to him that we have our very interesting guest here today.
Very good. Yes, Professor Maltsev, you have friends from Russia to South Africa to every point in between, and I suspect that that does have a lot to do with the gentleman who is sitting right next to you, I mean his presence at Carthage. Tell us about the connection that the two of you specifically have.
I was approached by Pavel to write a blurb for his book on history of economic thought, and I've read the book, and the book really impressed me. But I met, in real kind of terms, I met Pavel just last week in New York. I never met him before, but I was acquainted with his publications and his role as one of the most visible economists in today Russia. He is pretty young. I think he is 37, but he is one of the most senior economists in Russia. And I was happy to chair a panel in last week in King's College in New York for a scholars conference, and he was one of the presenters. And so, and because he never been to Chicago, he decided to come. And because he decided to come to Chicago, I thought that will be a propitious opportunity for my students, at least, to hear firsthand, to have some more Russian accent in this classroom.
We can never have too much Russian accent in a classroom. Very good. Well, I am happy to have that backstory here. And Professor Usanov, we are so happy to have you here. So if I did my math correctly, does that mean you were born roughly in 1981 or so?
1992.
Oh, I'm off 10 years. I told you I'm not an economist, not good with numbers. So tell us a little bit about your background. First of all, were you born in St. Petersburg
I was born in St. Petersburg, and my career in St. Petersburg. I had my degree in economics in this city, and now I am teaching economics in one of university in this city. About my background, my first job was banking, in the private banking in Russia, and the second, and right now I'm your researcher, and I'm a teacher of economics in university. This is my background, and my interest is economic policy, especially in modern Russia, history of economic thought and history of ideas. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important for Russian people and for people in other countries to have good conversation about economic policy, especially about relationship between different countries. I agree that friendship with very productive people in other countries, especially in the United States, will be very fruitful for all of us.
Can you explain to us why you became so interested in economics and at what point in your life that became this passion for you? I mean, I assume that happened before you chose to study it. I mean, what first made you interested?
Made you interesting. I think it's very simple because I was born in Soviet country. It was a centrally planned economy. My father was a teacher of economics too. And my first interest was Karl Marx because I have no chance to study something another. But step by step, I became more and more critical about ideas of Marx. And at this moment, I think it's absolutely absurd absolutely absurd tool for understanding our economic problems. And economic theory for me, it's like very fruitful instrument for understanding. It's a way of thinking and to understand reality, to understand opportunity cost, especially in politics. It's very important to have a comprehensive view of our society, of our economy, our culture. And Russia, I think not only in current situation, have a very high level of human capital. In musician, in science, etc. But I think at this moment we don't have enough doing for use these resources. But it's very important for the future.
Mm-hmm. So, at what point was it in your life that the Soviet Union fell, and you experienced what I understand, particularly from what Dr. Maltsev has described, a really wrenching period of transformation in your nation? Were you at a point where you could be aware of those changes and felt them in your own life?
You have to know that I was a young boy then. Soviet economy was collapsed, and of course I remember only a few situations. For example, I remember my visiting of magazine in Russia in the late period of Soviet centrally planned economy with my father. We trying to buy some milk, but we can't do it because it was huge queue and no milk for the buying. It was very bad experience for me because I was young. It was colder because St. Petersburg is not the best weather in the world. For example, right now we have, I think, near 0 degrees, and how much it will be in Fahrenheit?
32.
Very low level.
For September, yes.
Yes, for September. It was my first experience in Soviet, but I think most important, it's education. Education system. Good teacher is the best way for your own understanding. And I think I'm succeed man because I had very good teacher in economics and then dedicated my second book to him.
So your two books, by the way, or maybe there's even
three.
Oh, now there's three. I know of Science of Wealth and Economic Thought in Retrospect.
Yes.
And the third?
And third will be at the October, Future of Money. This is the last and third part of my trilogy of freedom. The name of these three books is Trilogy of Freedom, and the last part is the Future of Money. It's about our current problems in the United States, in Europe, in Russia, connected with money and inflation and crises, et cetera. I think it's very important, especially in this time of history.
So when one studies in Russia, as you did, I'm thinking of when you were first studying, generally speaking, how does Russia view its own history in the classroom? And at least as you experienced it in your own academic experience, again, as a student, was there freedom to talk about that history, in a sense, warts and all? I mean, not only the successes, but also the failures, the even the catastrophes that have been part of that history. Is that something that, by and large, teachers in Russia felt free to talk about?
Only a few, because at this moment, our universities and our schools, big part of schools in the hands of the state, and official propaganda trying to create another type of view about history. For example, most popular figure in our history, in Russian history, for the common people right now is Stalin. It's very sad, but it's true.
Wow.
Stalin, the first, one of the first figure, popular figure for Russian citizen. For me, it's very, very sad because we have enough information about his crimes and punishment. This is very sad.
Right. I mean, there's more information now, certainly, than there was at the time.
Absolutely.
And I just want to say, Professor Maltsev is nodding vigorously. I mean, you understand also this to be true, and I suspect it bothers you just as much.
Of course I do, yes. My first boss was Minister of Labor of Soviet Union, and he used to teach me life and saying that future is glorious. Today is filled with a great effort and great work. It is past, which is dark and unpredictable.
Hmm.
And that was true. It's completely true, because this is this in Russia, they have so many skeletons in their cupboards that it can really drag the whole country back.
Interesting. Back into really dark past mm-hmm. eras. What would you say, Professor Usanov, are the things about Joseph Stalin that so many Russians today find attractive? Why are they attracted to him?
Because he is a strong leader. I think the source of authoritarian in Russia today is the 19th in Russia, because we had big problems in our currency, inflation, very high level of crime, and for many people in Russia, 90s was a period of disaster. And as a result, our people believed that we need something like strong leader and president like maybe Stalin, because Stalin is the symbol of maybe not fair. Our people understand that he is not a good guy and he is make many kills. But for Union country, it's very important for in the view of the common people to have a strong leader with a power and with big ambition in geopolitics, because in Soviet period geopolitics was more important than economy, than something another. In 19th it was another period of the freedom and reforms. But mistakes creates something like a current situation, because at this moment Russian economy has have stagnation 5 years from the 2014, and this is a real problem, because we have very low level of real income and real wages in Russia, near maybe $700 per month. $700, it's not so big income for good life. And it's something, contradiction between geopolitical ambition and level of wealth. I think it's the biggest problem. What we should do, it's a great effective economy. And it was a slogan in the beginning of our president in his first election. His idea was competition and economic growth. It's a main goal for Russian state, and not only for state, for everybody. It's very important, and the source of this economic growth should be based on the free market, private property, and etc.
So you're saying Mr. Putin, in a sense, campaigned on that. That was his slogan.
Slogan, yes.
So in your mind, was he lying? I mean, was he not serious about that, or were there other forces that prevented him from creating what he promised he would?
It was 20 years ago, and it was another Putin in the beginning of his boarding. He was more liberal because one of his advisor of his of president was Andrei Larionov. He is now in the Qatar. I think it's the most influential economist from Russia today, and he is libertarian. He get advisor about decrease of government spending, low taxation. For example, in Russia, even today, we have a flat taxes and income tax equal 13% per income. I think it's the lowest taxes in Europe. It's something amazing, 13%. This is a level of income tax and flat.
So across the board.
And the source of economic growth in the beginning of the century is a result of this so flat and so low level of income. If you would like to get, to create incentives to invest, to create new items, to be more and more richer, you need to have low taxes, not high taxes, because high taxes destroy all incentives to growth. And it what works in the beginning of the century.
But in a sense, working no longer.
No longer. Because our people believes that economic growth it's a result of his smart policy. He's a smart guy. It's not a result of creativity of common people, but result of maybe spirit, maybe leadership of our president. And as a result, Putin for our people equal this maybe the stability and the future. I saw every day slogan at the cars, no Putin, no Russia.
Really?
Yes,
you,
really.
So you see that on bumper stickers
in
Russia?
I will send you a photo if you don't believe me.
I do believe you, but it's sort of true.
For me, it's something amazing because they don't believe in his own country because nobody mortal and what is this in the long run. I don't think it's a good idea.
So, in other words, there are many people in Russia mm-hmm. who believe more in Mr. Putin than they do in Russia.
Yes, of course. Saying. Yes, yes. Wow. I think it's our people afraid each other, and this is a next important source for the holding power in the hand of the Putin. Because if you afraid your neighbors. If you afraid the person who have no power but money, you will give your freedom for the authoritarian leader, and that's happened in Russia today, because for free society it's very important to have decentralization and connection between common people. And this is a big problem because the state have all resources. I mean, financial system, oil, gas, education, and first of all, it's media. Media in the hand of the state means that all information about, especially Western countries, it's propaganda. Because if you have problem in economy, you should explain to the people what is the source of the problem. And for Putin's propaganda, it's very easy because of other countries, Western countries, for example, because of United States and sanctions. And it works, and the propaganda works for our people. They believe that the source of our problem, it's not the policy of the Kremlin, it's a policy of another countries, Western countries, which hates Russia. Mm. It's also propaganda.
So in other words, they are to blame. I mean, for instance, we are to blame, or we are p- part of the problem rather than anything that Mr. Putin or his government are doing. Mm-hmm. That is the mindset of many Russians.
Yes.
I'm sure in modern Russia, nobody takes a poll the way people take a poll in the United States. So it's perhaps difficult to answer this question, but what is your best estimate of the portion of the Russian population that believes as you have just described? I mean,
in strong leadership,
right? I mean, and who are devoted to Mr. Putin in the way that you describe? Is it the majority? Is it a vast majority? Is it nearly all of the population? I mean, mm-hmm. surely there are Russians other than yourself who have concerns about this, but how numerous are they?
I understand. It's a very interesting question because we have right now another situation. More and more people became critical about current policy, but maybe 2 or 3 years ago, it was absolutely for Putin's, maybe more than 70%, 70. More than 70, official statistic was 80, 82, I don't remember correct estimation. More than half, absolutely, but not 100. Last years it became different because more and more people view critically for the policy, and at this moment I think it's not 50%, it's less. We have a good social investigation this process, and at the time it's decline of popularity of Putin's regime. It's understandable because for post-empire, Soviet economy was empire for a post-empire period to get Crimea was a symbol of success. It's like we reunion our Soviet great period, and we will great. It was a first reaction of Crimea, but 5 years, it's enough to understand that it's not so fairy tale, and it creates more problem, especially for the people, not for Crimea too, because we have a very high inflation. These 5 years, we don't have economic growth, and devaluation of official currency, very high devaluation, and it's a problem for our people. If you don't have enough money, I said to you about level of our income, and you lose your income because of devaluation and because the bankruptcy of the small and medium business. You have no idea what to do after this. And next problem of this tendency is that people go into public sphere for public sector. For example, Rosgvardia is a military organization in the hand of the state, something like police. And one of third, I think, people in Russia right now have connection with this police or Rosgvardia. I mean, have one of the member of family in these organizations. And it means that our people connected with state more than the private sector. And if you get money from the government, it's differ if you have your own business. You don't have a freedom to talk, to think, etc. You are a man of the state. You are part of the state. And very sad because these people are very, very creative, with high creativity. It's look like the later period in Soviet country because, for example, of course, we have another economy. Right now we have a market economy, but with a big corruption and big state without rules, without rule of law, and etc. And for me, for example, United States is very interesting example that freedom and property creates more and more wealth, and ideas of founding father and ideas of classical liberalism creates huge progress. And it's very important to explain people in Russia what is the source of real success. It's not intervention. Mm. It's not new territory, but it's correct rules for our life.
Mm-hmm. And allow people to enjoy their full potential in all kinds
absolutely.
Of ways.
Absolutely.
I'm just curious, and I want to make sure I ask you this before we run out of time. You are speaking here fairly freely about your mm-hmm. your what you find disconcerting or troubling about Mr. Putin and his government and the way that he is leading mm-hmm. Russia. Mm-hmm. Do you feel a comparable freedom to speak in this manner when you are in Russia? I mean, in St. Petersburg, or there do you have to be, in a sense, more cautious about mm-hmm. what you say and how you say it when you're talking about Vladimir Putin?
You have to know that most important media in Russia today in the hand of the state. And, of course, I couldn't tell anything at this media. I could tell anything in my kitchen for the small media, maybe 10 people. Of course, not 10, no, but we have in Russia 140 million people. And this is a huge country. And if you don't have a resource for official media, it doesn't matter for our politician. Of course, I'm afraid, like everybody in Russia, because we don't have any rights if you will have a problem. But it's something unpredictable. It's like maybe like in Soviet period. You don't know what could be the reason of your problems. Maybe you said something. Maybe you think something. It's like Orwell. You don't know. But why I should afraid if I don't understand the reason of this? I'm trying to explain my students. With this moment, I can do it. What is right and what is wrong for me in economy? Because for me, politics, it's not so interesting. I mean, I'm specialist in economy. But today in Russia, it's something absurd. I can't explain pure economic problems between the state is the biggest part of our political and economical system. And I might explain our students how it works and what will be the consequences. And maybe one of the beliefs at the young people in Russia, because they so smart and they creative and they look like the students in every countries. In every countries you couldn't find the differences between 20 years people in St. Petersburg or in New York City. They use the same gadgets. They knew very well English or other languages.
Quite right.
They have real picture of our policy.
Particularly
they understand everything. I think it's a good source for the future. Human capital, it's something amazing for Russia, because if you compare our history, we shouldn't have anybody with free mind in Russia.
Particularly important point among your many important points, the universality of young people's culture mm-hmm. and positive dimensions.
And so in Russia, do people have, in a sense, free access to the internet?
Yes, but with a few limits, because we have a big state and Department of IT regulation. I don't know how it will be correct in English, but I think you understood.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to ban our social networks. They capture biggest social network of Contakte. It's like the Facebook in the world. We have in Russia Contakte. It's a very famous social network. And Pavel Durov, he is a founder of this company, now not in Russia, because he lose his social network. Mm. And now social network in the hand of the Gazprom, Gazprom in the hand of the state, and state in the hand of the Putin. It's very interesting pyramid.
Wow. So when one is in social media in Russia, there's a in a very real way you are under the direct scrutiny of the government.
You need to understand that our president is ex-officer, KGB officer, and if you have... if you have a social network, you have all information about everybody.
Mm.
Because could you imagine Facebook in the hands of Department of the State?
Right.
The FBI. What is,
FBI.
Some people think it is, but but what I would say that definitely when Putin was elected, really elected on a relatively free elections in 2000, I wrote an article, Meat voted for a meat grinder. Mm. And the problem with that is that people, because what socialism is, it's a public slavery when everybody belongs to the state. And then the good part of it is that you don't need to make any choices. You don't need to make any choice. It's life which is very easy. Mm. They make choices for you. You can blame them. But you are not responsible for anything yourself. And many people are missing this in today's Russia. And that's why many people love Mr. Putin. And also that I think Pavel mentioned 2014. Why the crisis began? 2014 was the time when Putin invaded Ukraine, when he took over Crimea. So then economic policy was replaced by militarism, by this mobilization kind of ideology and things like that. So Russia, as we would say here in the United States, Russians would say Russia is a great place to be from.
and not to live in.
And many people, and the smartest people, like Khodorkovsky, who was the richest man there, like Durov, like many others, they are outside of Russia. I see so many Russians here doing very well, working in IT, working in academia, working wherever, selling sausages in New York. And so these people, I mean, I'm happy for them, but Russia is missing them. There is human capital in Russia. It's called brain drain.
Mm, right, the brain drain, and very serious in
my students said, brain drain. I'm teaching labor economics, and I talked about brain drain. He said, brain drain is how I feel on Mondays.
Right, exactly. If only it were a problem one day a week, yes. So Professor Uzanov, I think I would be remiss if I didn't at least touch on the matter of the connection between Vladimir Putin and our president, Donald Trump. And of course, there is plenty of discussion about exactly what the nature of that connection is. I'm really curious to know what your impression is of that, and maybe even more particularly the Russian people. How do they collectively view the United States, and to what extent is the name Donald Trump important to the people of Russia?
I think Yuri is the most specialist in the relationship between Russia and the United States because I'm living in Russia. If you ask me in few words, it doesn't matter for our people because it's also a result of propaganda.
Mm.
And Russia trying to use image of our Putin like strong leader, and it's very important for our propaganda to have not maybe good relationship, but to make something the biggest, like empire. And this is very important for our propaganda. But I think it's more correct in the view of Yuri.
What Mr. Putin, because he is kind of like a con artist in power, and what he was saying, yes, we put Mr. Trump where he is. And that was one kind of point of view. Now, because I think our policy towards Russia is the most anti-Russian or anti-Putin, because we sent away 70 diplomats. We put a lot of sanctions on Russia. We closed four consulates of Russian tradition in the United States. So today they're kind of in disarray. From one hand, He was praising Mr. Trump. When Trump was elected, they had a lot of parties, they had a lot of fireworks and things like that, because they thought in Russia still they have an image that we in the United States, we love to hate rich people. In Russia, they don't yet do that.
Mm.
You see what I mean? And so Mr. Trump is considered to be a successful businessman who build these buildings that they can see in the newspapers and magazines. From another hand, I think that the best would be to have good relations with Russia. And here I would agree with Mr. Trump, that who is all time repeating it on and on. Because, however, having said that, Russia is only 2% of the world economy. United States, 25%. So they are 13 times smaller than we are. Mm-hmm. And they are kind of like colossus on the clay feet. In the sense but from another hand, I think that George Washington told us in his testament, be friends with everybody and trade with the whole world.
Mm.
If you want, I will clarify my position to explain how common people in Russia, for example, in Uber, because Uber, it's not so expensive in Russia like in other countries. And it's usually Russian people love to speak in their cars, I think, like in other countries, like in the United States.
They feel free there to speak.
Free, you know, problem, because it's very free space.
Like in your kitchen.
Like in your kitchen. Your car is also. And usually people in Russia, drivers in Russia, said that Trump is a cool guy because he is a businessman. He is not a bureaucrat like maybe another candidates, and he is a real man, and he made something like Western style in traditionalism. Because maybe you know that in Russia, traditionalism, Orthodox Church, is very influential part of our society. And the problem, this ban of speech and something gender problem and migration, it's something very popular in this traditional field of our traditional part of our society. And if you ask these people why Trump is good, because it's look like our guy, not like maybe Obama and maybe Democrats, etc. It's all that these people know about America, because it's something bizarre. They can say something good about president, but they hate United States. They use Uber and use iPhone on his car, and a car also from United States, and he driver told me that I'm so, it's very bad country, United States.
I had a boss, my first boss, he said, we are a free country, I can tell everything, whatever I have, the most anti-Soviet thoughts, to my bottle of vodka.
Well, and that's a really fascinating thing to think about. People perhaps on the one hand using all of these things that come from America, and yet in a sense hating the country itself and what it stands for.
It makes cartoons in Russia, not state media, that show us some type of patriots. Because our official policy of the state, we are patriots. We believe in Russia. We use only Russian items, cars, and love our Crimea, not Italy, not another beautiful places. But this is just a propaganda, because the people near the state and inside the state have real estate in Europe, in United States, and in other countries. They're not patriot because they use gadgets. They have a dream our very successful men in Russia have a dream to send his or her daughter or son to Europe for studying, not in Russia. And for example, pharmacy and hospital, it's also very pretty for our statesmen.
Hmm. What do you foresee in the near future for Russia. Mm-hmm. And as long as Mr. Putin is in charge, do you see what you call Putinomics being the force that will, in a sense, control mm-hmm. everybody's lives mm-hmm. and certainly the Russian economy?
I think at this moment, future is uncertain. At this moment, it looks like there is a stable system because Putin uses two very influential instruments. This is political repression and permanent election. It's a strange mix, but it works in an authoritarian system, because if you don't have election, you will have many questions. You are a dictator. No, I'm not a dictator. We have elections. We have no problem in Russia, he said, our president. And it's true that we have an election, but if you compare this with the political repression, it's not a problem to win in every election. Because if you destroy your enemy, for the prison, for the foreign countries, maybe kill, we have this type of story, you wouldn't have any problems in elections. And it works in the short run, and I couldn't find any type of action that makes something another in the short run. In the long run, it's most important to have connection between reason, people with reason, and this is very important, because the future of this man, it's a future of our of all the world.
And with elections, I think Stalin used to say that that we're a free country. We have elections. And I don't care who votes how. The only thing I care about, who counts these votes.
Mm-hmm. Ah. And this is absolutely correct for Russian for Russia today, because friends of absolutely loyal to the president, his friends at the counting department of voters. And it's also source for cartoons. In Russia, because it's very, very fun. No, it's not only fun, it's sad, but fun too.
Yeah, both at the same time. In our last minute or so, and this is a more complicated question that I should ask with so little time, but what do you think is most important about you as an economist, the fact that you are from Russia, that you are a Russian economist? What perspective does that give you that somebody else from another place would not have?
I think it's very important to be an economist in Russia or in other states like Russia, because without enlightenment, without understanding economic principles, we will become more and more unfree country. Mm. And for me, my mission is to explain our students, my colleagues, my friends, what is good for the future. Why it's very important to live in free society, for explain my friends and my colleagues what is United States, because I have YouTube channel more than 11,000 subscribers and more than 700,000 view, and I trying to explain our people, for example, what is United States in real. Because if you have only official information, it was something bizarre. But if you will subscribe my YouTube channel, it will be better. This is my mission.
Absolutely. Well, we are glad that your mission has taken you not only to the campus of Carthage College, but also to the studios of WGTD to share your really fascinating perspective. Pavel Usanov is from the Russian Academy of National Economy and European University in St. Petersburg, Russia, the author of several different books, and also with his own YouTube channel, again, which is usanov.tv, where you can view his lectures and presentations. Pavel Usanov, I really appreciate you being here today on The Morning Show. This was a most illuminating and interesting conversation, and I wish you very, very well in the years ahead, and thank you again for being part of The Morning Show.
Thank you.
And Dr. Yuri Maltsev and Dr. Art Sear, my faculty colleagues from the Clausen Center, great to have you here as well. Thank you for helping to make today's Morning Show possible.
Thank you, Greg. This was one of your best.
Thank you so much. Tomorrow on the morning show, Herschel Krieger from the theater faculty at Carthage will be talking about The Doll's House, which is about to be presented. And we'll also be hearing from one of the members of a quartet, a cappella quartet called Women of the World. They are going to be performing a concert at Carthage College this Thursday evening. I do want to also mention that the world yesterday lost a great singer, Jessie Norman. I had the privilege of interviewing Miss Norman several years ago, and I'm going to be sharing that interview in the Morning Show podcast. You should search for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. It's available on Apple.